Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
Philip Boer, welcome. First of all, where do I find you right now?
I am in Malta in the studio where I usually record, called Temple Studios. Pretty cool, sunny outside, and I'm hanging out here a bit, maybe write a song, stuff like that.
Where is home?
Usually in Germany, in Dortmund, it's, you know, the team, Borussia Dortmund, from football maybe. That's my hometown, still have a flat in London, and I still hang a lot, a lot here in Malta.
So where is your creative home, do you think? Is it, you know, I mean, I don't know what you need for your creative home, maybe people, pain, dysfunction, like many artists, but is there a place where you consider... that you really have a creative home, or is it just anywhere that you are?
I write my first, always come my lyrics, and my lyrics, I discover them anywhere, you know, can be on a plane, can be anywhere on a train, can be, I, for example, write songs, I sit in the middle of The Hague, you know, in Holland, and I sit opposite the apple shop, you know, and I observe the people who go in apple shops, and I see how they behave and come out, and that's a song, you know what I mean?
You mentioned you're in Malta, that you've got this, you've still got a house in London, and your home's still in Dortmund.
A flat.
Okay, a flat in London. No one can afford a house in London. Got a flat in London. I can't afford anything there now. What makes a home the place that's no longer the place you want to be? Because you've moved around a lot, and I just wondered, is there a set of circumstances that come up that make you want to move? Because it feels like, you know, having three homes, in a sense, means that you're always moving around.
My home is in where I was born, in Dortmund, really. Since the COVID situation, I wasn't a lot in London, and I wasn't here a lot in Malta since 2021 or 22. I came back to Malta, and I wasn't here for a few years as well. So I guess my home, kind of what you maybe mean, is a kind of a family or something like that. That kind of stuff is in Dortmund, in Germany.
So let's get on to this Jubilee release, Jubiläens Edition of Boafenia. Tell me, first of all, what you are exactly releasing, because it's quite a package.
Yeah, I'm really proud of it. It's like a double CD with that original Boafenia remastered, plus on the other vinyl there's 10 new songs. Then there's a lot of old going through tapes and stuff, and a 10-inch force CD package with a 10-inch vinyl and a lot of archive material that we found, and one other new song and stuff like that. And then there's What did I say? Double CD, double vinyl, and that special box, big box, yeah, called, I think they call it yearbook nowadays, whatever that means.
Yeah, and also a book of photos and some additional sort of extras within it that you've got. Why was it important now to release that, considering it's sort of, you know, Boafenia itself, I'm not talking about the newly discovered and remastered tracks, but Boafenia itself was released 30 years ago. So why was it important to do that right now for you?
Good question. I think it was our most successful album. And I don't know, it's just nice, you know, it's like, I want to celebrate it. And it wasn't out, it wasn't available on any format really. So I'm proud that it's out. I want to celebrate it, you know, and with the fans and stuff like that.
I mean, you said you're going through old masters, I think it was old master tapes, and like finding material. I'm a writer of scripts today. And when I write things, they come from, you know, a lot of pain that's inside, and it's almost like reworking that pain. And if I read something that I've written a few years ago, I completely see that differently, and I see myself differently. So with this release, how has that changed the view of yourself, of how you were back then and how the music was back then?
I agree to what you said anyway, that you are observing your own work from the past from a totally new, changed perspective. You know, you don't sometimes even, you sometimes even think probably, oh, was that me? You know what I mean? And different personality. I don't feel that with my work. It's like, What I feel is the times were very different compared to 2023. They were really different. Yeah.
So what was different about them?
I split from the two people from the band in 1992. And then I discovered a book called V by my favorite author called Thomas Pynchon, an American author, a writer. And it's the story leads to Malta, to the island of Malta. And I read it, I bought a ticket for the plane and ended up in Malta. And I kind of find it as weird as Thomas Pynchon had described it. So I was here feeling a bit weird, feeling a bit what I like, a parallel world. And I asked people, is there a studio here? You know, I went to a record shop, which is now the oldest record shop in the world, called D'Amato in the city of Valletta. And I met someone there who worked there, and his name was Woody. And I asked Woody, can I work here? Is he a studio? And he recognized me kind of, and he led me to Temple Studios, which was then a lot smaller. Now it's big, you know, it's really big. That was the start, and I felt very free. And the times were, to me, totally different. Why? Because I guess me and my mates who hung out here, we could do everything we wanted. Nowadays you cannot do that. There was a time when you went out and stuff like that in the night, there was total freedom, you know, and we did a lot of stuff that was idiotic or off, you know, and good material to write. But that material, the weird material, wasn't on Boafinia. Boafinia is a light, more light, very free, bohemian record. Yeah, while the weird stuff that we was going on for like 2 or 3 years, I kind of relived Thomas Pynchon stuff, you know, like and Valletta and also in whatever. And that lyrics I described, and when I had a metal band, I had a metal band for 2 years, which was called Voodoo Cult, and the lyrics were all a bit, maybe from my point of view, a bit silly, you know, but really what they were were totally true. Everything that I describe in these songs, you would believe it's totally invented, but it wasn't. It was all, everything in there was true, maybe slightly exaggerated.
Sorry. So with Boafinia back then why weren't the weird songs taken for that album? Was it down to the record company? Because you've always been known as someone who is really, you know, in total creative control of your work. So I just wondered what the reason was that they were put to the side.
Yeah, because I probably left out some stuff. Like Boafinia was written in 1992 and mainly totally on my own in London. They were all demoed in London. That's why when I got the flat, I guess. I was, for example, in Roundhouse Studio and totally on my own with nothing really, and maybe one or two musicians that I got from there. There was this guy called Gary Bronn, who was really nice to me, gave me the studio for a real nice price. And that's where I think I wrote most of the material, and then took it, maybe then came Malta, you know. So, but that's exciting times, you know, cool, really cool.
So what do you like about Temple Studios? Because I know that Rammstein have recorded there, that Susie and the Banshees and a whole horde of others. Is that important at all? That is there something, you know, that a lot of people always talk about, there's an atmosphere or there's some way of, you know, there's a sort of nice way of working or something like that. But what is it about Temple Studios that sort of appeals to you and has allowed you this sort of creativity?
The studio owner is a very, very good friend of mine, and he is also co-composer because he's very good in everything. He's a good engineer and also a friend. And a lot of people meet here, you know, also like painters or whatever, you know. It's can you say that, melting point, you know? I mean, it's no, it's a meeting point, whatever.
A melting point.
Pot, yeah, whatever. Yeah. And it's a free place, you know. It's like, it's very well equipped as well. And I like to write with David, you know, because I'm not the mega, mega cool, good trained musician. I'm more like, I can play everything a bit, you know, but I need a good musicians around me. I was very influenced when I was young by people like Japan or Roxy Music, yeah, like these people who did rock music or whatever, but not really. Also, they were using stuff like an oboe, you know, which was totally unused in that time. So I put the oboe in my, I guess, most famous song called Container Love, you know, and just whatever. So I hang out here, but I also get help from David, the studio owner, and other people who, you know, who come here from everywhere, you know, and then they're there. And then I ask them, oh, can you play a bit of guitar for me? And they say, yeah, sure. And then I tell them, this is good, and this is not good, you know. And I'm more like a director, and yeah, I learned that, and I'm a good producer as well now and stuff.
you mentioned Japan and Roxy music. When I was a teenager, when I was 13, it was in 72, and Bowie was,
of course,
a massive idol. But but Bowie represented, for me, it represented something additionally in terms of, I mean, I loved his music, and also I love the fact that he brought so many different influences from outside, which is, you know, also what you do, the books and movies and other things that, that inspire you. But the other thing for Bowie, as a gay teenager back then, is he provided a world where I felt I belonged and could be safe. So what artists represented for you a world where you felt you belong?
David Bowie is obviously a major role model, always been and will always be, of course. I would say the number one. And also I like then this kind of post-punk stuff like XTC, like the bit arty Wire, you know, XTC, Wire, Japan rock, early especially Brian Eno influenced. You know what I'm talking about, you know, and those were my influences.
But
Clash. I always loved Clash.
Did you have that sense, like I did, that I didn't really belong, or I felt I didn't belong at that time? I'm not sure if I feel I belong a lot of the time, but I felt like I didn't belong back then at all. And Bowie was the sort of thing where I could belong. Were you someone when you were young that you felt you didn't belong in the environment that you were in and you wanted to be somewhere else?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I was, my nature really is shy, you know, as I'm not an entertainer. I was always surprised that I was a bit successful, you know. And the personality, you see, David Bowie just had different personalities and he was very open to absolutely everything. You know, that's that opened the doors for a lot of people, I guess, for a lot of insecure people who were maybe a bit harassed or did feel a bit harassed by him, you know, everything, you know, a society, whatever.
Do you feel, I mean, you have an incredibly loyal following. Do you feel that your fans also see that in you? And that's why they're, you know, that's why they're so close to you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's weird. It's, I cannot understand that side, to be honest. There was like a loyal fan here couple of days ago, and David let them in into the studio, and there was a tape of an old tape of Philip Bourne, the Voodoo Club, and she said, "Oh, can I touch it? Can I touch it?" You know, and when David told me the story, I said, "Yeah, they're a bit weird, you know." It's like, but I don't know why.
I think it's.
But I know I love them. They are loyal, and they. I can't believe it that I'm still doing music, and still even can survive from it in these times. I'm totally astonished. But thanks to that loyalty, for sure. Sorry to interrupt.
What process has there been from finding these, you know, slightly weirder tracks, and then bringing them up to? Whatever you know you've wanted to do with them to be able to put them on this album, what was the process?
You mean the Boa Finia or the new songs?
The new songs that are on the wide. Yeah,
they were somehow connected to Boa Finia. They came, the record company came up few years ago and said Boa Finia is going to be 30, and then we were going through the tapes here, and we have some Boa Finia tapes here as well, because they're mine now, and then we discovered stuff, you know, that wasn't finished, it was kind of refused, and we discovered some voice and of the of my original singer Pia. And then we turned them into two brand new songs, you know, really. We co-wrote them in the ghost or spirit, sorry, of Boa Finia. And Yeah, from that point on, David and me felt the magic, and we wrote another, like, I think, 9 songs. Also in that spirit of Boa Finia, but then we gave it to a mixer who is very much up to date. How can I say? Now, yeah, very 2023. Toby from Berlin, and also Robin, the master there, really have the sound of nowadays without selling out, you know what I mean? That's it, yeah.
You mentioned Tony Visconti, and back then, Craig Leon, E-Rock, and yourself produced on Boa Finia. How did you look back and see what had been done back then in terms of the quality and the people that we worked with and what they brought to the music?
Craig Leon obviously was not only doing Blondie, but he was also working on Talking Heads. That's another influence of mine. And Nigel Walker was on that, I don't know. And Tony obviously had that Bowie connection and also did our biggest, whatever it's called, hit, you know what I mean? That's a joke, but song. And then I met him again. We went with that material, we went to New York, and he had a studio, he still has it as far as I know. And then we worked, that was the second working level of Boa Finia. He played a lot. If you listen to a song, to that song called Love on Sale, that's half of it is played by Tony Visconti. That's the bass, the guitars, the vocals behind me, the harmonies, everything. And he also, that's funny, he also could imitate David Bowie's vocals 100%. That's there's a song where he did it, and I don't know if it's somewhere on the mixes or even on the original song. It has a silly title called Master of Dimona. I wouldn't really write that nowadays. Anyway, there's a part in the middle somewhere where he purposely proved me that he can sing like David Bowie. If you listen to it carefully, you can see it. You can hear it 100%. You think David Bowie's in the room.
I interviewed Visconti a few years ago, and he told me this story about Bowie when they were living in the same house in South London. And Bowie would walk over to the fridge in sort of mime style because he was practicing, and then get a bottle of milk out and pour the tea. And it was like the whole time he was learning and changing and developing, which I found really fascinating. Is that something, are you someone that really always pulls in influences and gets something out of any situation?
Definitely, yes. But I don't have the... David Bowie I don't want to compare at all, you know. David Bowie was head of a bit more of an entertainer in him, in himself, in his personality. He was playing with it. And David Bowie had that one advantage that is he does what he wants, you know. He did absolutely what he wanted to do always. And that's a quality that an artist needs if he's good, you know. He's the role model of I'm doing what I want, and if you don't like it, then the record company fires me. I don't give a damn, you know what I mean? That's what I like. That's what I always liked. Say no to them, you know. Record companies, come here. Like when Rammstein was here, I've heard that Rammstein almost gave up after the A&R man, who was also mine, was here giving them the shit. And then the A&R man, the product manager, left, and they were 3 days, they couldn't work anymore because they were so, devastated, you know what I mean? Record companies, back then, they could be evil, you know, and I always said, always said no to them, you know. That's the art of saying no is cool. That's what I like. So I always got fired from the record companies. I had them all, and they've all fired me. And like Mark E. Smith with The Fall or whatever, you know what I mean? You do one record and because you insulted them or something, which I always like to do also. And they kick you out, you know.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You're listening to Pop, The History Makers, with me, Steve Blame.
You mentioned two tracks that are on Boafenia, and one guy that I know called Larry Flick, who was the head journalist at Billboard for many, many years, he has a theory that the second track on an album is the track that the record company will want to release, and the seventh track on the album is the track that the artist loves most. And weirdly, you just mentioned both of them. So Love on Sale was the second track, and Master of Demona, which you said was, or Tony Visconti was, you know, prominently involved in that. Would you say that Love on Sale was the track that the record company definitely wanted to release, and Master of Demona was the track that you were into?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, of course. Even with David Bowie, you know, it's if you're a fan of a good artist, and you're a fan forever, it's not necessarily the singles that are the best about an artist. You know what I mean? It's the what you're saying, track number 7 or track number 11 or whatever, you know, that's the most interesting ones who live even longer, you know. But then, yeah, or singles, yeah. Like, but I don't know what a single is nowadays, got no idea.
But the reason I mention that, it's symbolic of a battle with the record company. That was it. That the record company will want one thing and the artist may want another, but the record company sort of put it a little bit back into obscurity. And today is very different. So that was my real point. Have you mellowed since 30 years ago in any way?
In a lot of, I don't know. Yeah, I'm a bit nicer nowadays, but yeah, I'm mild, yeah, sometimes. And I'm getting less angry, which is good, I think.
What do you feel you were angry at?
Oh, you want to become political?
Yeah, it's your interview, not mine.
I know, but I don't want to go into like war and stuff like that. If I feel something is unfair, if I feel someone is not telling the truth, if I feel that someone doesn't say what he thinks and lying, and these are the things. And double, what is it called? In Germany, we call it Doppelmoral, means double morality. Can you say
yeah,
that?
Yeah, double
you
know standards, I would say. One standard for yourself.
Double standards.
Yeah. You've often said you don't look back on the past, but how does that fit in with the release of this album and the extra tracks?
Yeah, good question, good question. It's just that people like me always... You know, I had every record company firing me. Sometimes I want to be, it has something to do with pride, you know what I mean? It's sometimes I want to show people like, hey, my material still, thanks to people like Craig Leon and Tony Visconti and stuff like that, it doesn't sound dated, you know what I mean? And I want to show to people that my work, after 30 years, sounds, you know, it's not outdated, you know, it sounds fresh and it's timeless. And some people are still interested in the work I've done. It's a, you know, that's always like, you're a bit proud of it and you're happy that someone releases it. That's it, you know, like.
You mentioned the two tracks with Piers vocals that you've used. What sort of experience was that for you, for someone who was, you know, in a relationship for many years with her? Did you have to talk to her again and deal with that, or how was it a complete detachment?
More or less a complete detachment. We are not friends anymore. So I had to ask one of my kids, can you contact her and get the permission, you know, and although the lyrics were mine, but still, so she said yes. And I think she liked it as far as I've heard. And so, yeah, we were able to use it, turn it into, she hasn't heard it, you know, but not yet.
But do you see this as a solo album?
No. It's Philip Bourne, the Voodoo Club, is also always a solo album with the Voodoo Club. You know, the Voodoo Club can be producers, can be musicians, can be fans, can be people who work for me, which is friends anyway. I mean, the people I'm surrounded with, also life and everything, it's like a bunch of, let's say, 15 people, and they're loyal and they're always a bit, they're all a bit weird, you know, and a bit, you know, they're cool, you know, and that's it. And did that answer any? No, that didn't answer a question, eh?
Oh, it did, because I asked whether it was a solo album and you said no.
So solo, no, I'm sorry. So no, I'm not solo. No, I'm Philip Bourne, and the Voodoo Club is always a solo album or never. You know what I mean? This, yeah.
So there are two quotes on your website. One of them is, the development of full artificial intelligence could spend the end of humankind or the human race, and that was Stephen Hawking. So have you tried to use AI to write a Philip Boas song?
No, I never tried it. I don't want to try it. I don't want to try it because I'm technically, digitally, you know, not very good, you know. And the people around me, one or two could do that, could use that AI information, but I don't know. Maybe I should try it one day. When I was at school, we had to learn in English lessons, we had to read books like 1984. That's a heavy influence, you know, and it was for Bowie and for other people. And now we are there, you know. It's just sometimes I'm a bit worried about it, you know, but I don't want to be frustrated about it. But here and there, I'd like to sing about it a bit, you know, and that I'm maybe a bit afraid. And Stephen Hawking must know, really, you know, I really like that guy. And he was also funny, you know, and I just picked that up because sometimes it hits my thoughts, you know.
Then I wonder what you're going to think of this, because I went in earlier and I wrote, give me three questions for Philip Boas. And so I'm going to give you the three questions and see what you think. Well, you've been making music for over 30 years. How has your creative process evolved over time, and what keeps you motivated to continue creating? Good question, bad question?
No, that's a good question. It's like just, you know, in the COVID times, I was sitting there and I was reading and watching every series that was cool, you know, like five times. And then you sit there and said, I want to write a song. I want to go away from here and want to write a song. And made me crazy, absolutely crazy that I couldn't write songs. It's just, and I, that made me find out that I like it. I just like creating music, you know. It's like, it's fun, you know. So, things are simple sometimes. It's just fun and playing gigs and stuff like that and talking about music and all that. It's just fun, you know.
So the second question was, your lyrics often touch on themes of alienation, dystopia, and social commentary. How do you see your role as an artist in reflecting and commenting on the world around us?
Minimal, you know. I just have absolutely no influence on anyone. It's, I don't know who wrote that, you know. I like that dystopia stuff, and what they mean is like people, books like Bleeding Edge by Thomas Pynchon and stuff like that, but I don't think I have any influence on anything, you know.
Okay, the third question, this is the last one, but I think this is one that I would never ask anyone. Anyhow, you've been a part of the German music scene for decades. How do you see the current state of the industry, and what advice would you give to up-and-coming musicians trying to make a name for themselves?
Well, that's a bit of an evil question, you know, because let's say 15 years ago, I would have answered, just say no, you know, learn to say no. Nowadays, that option, it's too easy said, you know what I mean? Because the options shrink a bit, you know, it's like, it's a bit unfair and arrogant to say that. So I see the German music scene as fresh as it ever was, maybe even a little bit better than it was. And I would never give any lecture or advice to them because I'm from the 80s and 90s, you know. You know, yeah.
Okay, the other quote on your website is, a desk is a dangerous place from which to view the world. And that's from John le Carré. How dangerous is a mixing desk? And I see that as somewhat isolated in some way in terms of viewing the world.
What John le Carré meant is that a lot of people write about stuff that they've never seen, that they've never experienced. You know, you cannot write about Libya if you haven't been in Libya. You know what I mean? As an example, well, I have been, you know. And the point is, a lot of writers really, or especially my one, no, forget that one, a lot of people who write and criticize should really go there, you know, and find out how it really is and not like looking into the bloody net and discover it by documentaries. No, they should go there, you know, and observe. That's what I meant, and that's what John Le Carré, the writer, meant. A lot of people have no clue, pretend they have a clue. I don't know. Yeah.
So is technology the ability for us to look at other places and experience them only from documentaries or only from the net actually making us more stupid?
Well, that's drastic, yeah, but all I'm demanding is that they, before they talk about it or write about it, they should just see it, you know what I mean? And personally, with their own eyes. That's what I meant. With on a lot of my songs, I really went there, you know, and saw it. But that's not necessarily about me, you know. Not everything is like, what do you call it, autobiography, you know, that word. Sorry, you know what I mean. Personal, you know. Sometimes my language is a bit limited because I haven't been in English-speaking language for a longer time, countries, because of COVID and stuff. So sorry, I'm not trained enough at the moment.
Yeah, I have the same thing. When I'm in here in Germany, I'm English, and when I'm in England, for some reason now, because I change the words around a little bit or come out with a German word, I'm European in some way. So yeah. So I get that completely, that you lose part of the language wherever you are. You're going to be going on tour, I think, in late summer, is it?
Yeah, I think we start end of September or something, and then go on to, we don't know, we'll see. And we have already played a lot of shows.
But in terms of this album and these new tracks and so on, there'll be ones that you will take with you. I mean, obviously you've done Boafenia tracks before, but these new tracks, you will be taking those on tour and in front of an audience, and that's part of what you want to do in the future.
Yeah, I think the next 10, 15, 20 shows or whatever or more, we're going to concentrate a bit on the old Boafenia stuff and a couple of the new songs, yeah.
My final question, what happened to Paul, the guy that worked in a club that relates to the Container Love and also Love on Sale? What was the last word you ever heard about him?
I lost track, but I know that he died, and I know there's even... I don't know. He was real, you know. He was speaking like that, or like I'm singing, or telling the story in the Container Love one. He was talking like that. He was somewhere between reality and you know what I mean, dreaming, you know. And he was a happy man, although he was jobless and all that, and he was a bit abused. Then later in the song Love on Sale, he was a bit abused, but then he was real, you know. He was a happy person with a very unhappy fate, and he was handling it quite well, you know. It's a sad song, but then in the chorus, the Container Love chorus is positive, you know what I mean? Because he was like that, he managed his own fate, you know, quite well.
I want to thank you for the interview, but I also want to thank you for your cultural input into the world, because I think artists are often not told, and I think that journalists or people who interview them, I don't really see myself as a massive journalist, but people who interview them should also show respect for what they've brought into the world. And certainly with Boafenia, you had a massive impact. So I want to thank you for that and wish you success with this wider box set and album. So Philip Boa, thank you very much.
And thank you, Steve. Thank you.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.